Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at the China slowdown and considering how likely or unlikely that is to hit global equities. Chinese retail sales, fixed asset investment and new lending growth all fell in April in further signs the economy could be suffering from recent government measures to curb an unsustainable expansion in credit. Although commodities have reacted badly, do stable foreign exchange reserves suggest that China should have this slowdown under better control than previous episodes? Our expert panel will assess all of this, as well as exploring the implications of new measures designed to open up the world's third largest bond market to offer investors more exposure to the world's second largest economy. We start today with Kiran Ganesh, Executive Director at UBS Wealth Management. Kiran's been writing on this theme recently, so what would he say are some of the key takeaways?
We were just looking at the idea that China's obviously had a very big influence on the world in the past decade or two, obviously transforming the way that the world produces goods and trades goods and transforming the fortunes of many countries that rely on selling commodities to China, everything from copper in Chile to iron ore in Australia. But we think that now China's kind of approaching what we've called the third wave, which is where its financial system is now starting to get more integrated with the rest of the economy. China's needing to attract more foreign money to expand further effectively. So now, where investors previously could look at China as being something which is a growing economy, which had a positive influence for the rest of the world, now it's more about investing directly in China, and therefore people need to be, I guess, more concerned when we start to see rising debt ratios and signs of slower growth there.
We asked Angus Grigg, China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review based in Shanghai, if pondering the possible impact of a slowdown on equities is even the right question to be asking right now.
I think the issue for China at the minute is that its economy is slowing at a time when people like Moody's are forecasting that its debt levels will be rising. So the issue is, yes, growth is slowing, but the debt levels are rising very significantly. And so the sort of bigger concern, I guess, is that while the debts continue to rise and growth slows, we've also got a situation where reform is not really happening in China. So you've got this sort of triple whammy, really, which probably plays into sort of broader investor sentiment around the world and people sort of marking down China and the sort of risk profile of China based on those type of assumptions that the biggest outlook for China probably wasn't what it was 2 to 3 years ago.
Angus Grigg, and we'll return to some of those questions around debt later. First, though, we asked Thomas Deng, Managing Director and Chief China Strategist in the UBS Wealth Management CIO, how, if at all, in his view, China's slowdown might hit global equities.
The slowdown is within the market expectation, then the impact on global equity will be muted. Otherwise, if slowdown more than the market expected, then apparently it will have a disproportionate impact. So I think the key is China's slowdown is pretty much a consensus among the market, because first quarter GDP grew 6.9%, and now I think the full year forecast is ranging 6.5 to 6.7. So as long as the slowdown still falls into that range, I would think the impact on global equity will be muted.
Now, some observers say that the Chinese economy is suffering from recent government measures to curb an unsustainable expansion in credit. They point to retail sales, fixed asset investment, and new lending growth all falling last month to support that assertion. Do they have a point, though? Kiran Ganesh, again.
I think the government is well aware that its rate of credit growth is unsustainable, but they're sort of caught between two stools. On the one hand, they're trying to make sure that growth doesn't drop below 6.5% per annum, which is obviously a very high level of growth when we compare it to any other countries of similar sizes. But on the other hand, they want to kind of keep that growth sustainable. And what they end up doing is sort of flip-flopping between two strategies. Whenever growth starts to slow down too much, then they will lean on on credit. They will tell banks to lend. They will tell state-owned enterprises to produce more, regardless of whether or not there's demand. And then growth obviously picks up. But then they'll start to see, you know, the downside of telling people to produce when there's no demand is a higher debt. And then as a next strategy, then they'll start to try and clamp down on that debt. So I think what we've just seen in the past couple of months is them pulling on the debt lever and sort of trying to reduce that. And most likely in the next couple of months, we'll see them pushing on the growth lever once again.
Indeed, retail sales, fixed asset investment and new lending growth did fall in April. But does this mean it's a jump to say that the economy is suffering from recent government measures to curb that expansion in credit? Angus Gregg.
I think they're a slightly different indices. I think China remains the world's best consumption story. So yes, retail sales have slowed a little bit, but they're still growing at above 10% on an annual basis. And on many measures, I think most people think that sort of real incomes in China are understated. So I think the consumption story is very real in China. I think, you know, Chinese consumers remain the sort of focus of many multinationals. And, you know, really, I don't think that story is going to stop. I think the issue, once again, is debt and is leverage. And there's no doubt there has been a pretty, you know, sizable tightening of credit conditions here in China. And that is starting to feed into the property market. It is making sort of business conditions more difficult. The one thing you would say with that is that actually the sort of manufacturing sector has picked up a little bit and is holding. And so that is actually giving some, you know, positive headwinds for the Chinese economy, the fact that their sort of exports are doing pretty well at the moment, a little bit unexpectedly, really.
Everything is relative, of course, and China is still well on track for 6.5% growth minimum, but it's still a slowdown. There are those that say that China should have this slowdown under better control than in previous episodes due to stable foreign exchange reserves. Does Kiran Ganesh go along with that?
When countries typically get into some kind of debt crisis, it's usually because foreigners own lots of their debt, or they owe foreigners money, and they are their destiny is out of their own control. So if you look at whether it's Argentina or Greece, you had these kind of situations where it's, you know, foreign-owned debt and that causes problems. Now, if you look at a country like Japan, which has, you know, well over 200% debt to GDP, it manages that perfectly fine, largely because its debt is owned domestically, so that they can better control it. Now, in China more recently, what we've seen is that money has been flowing out of China from, you know, all of those sort of domestic savings, seeking opportunities elsewhere. And that meant they needed to attract a lot of foreign money. So that's part of why we saw some of the crisis times in the financial markets related to China in 2015 and 2016. But this year, the government has tightened up the capital controls in China. There's less money now flowing out of the country, which means that we think that they can control this a little better. Their hand isn't getting forced by money flowing abroad.
Does Angus Gregg think that talking about foreign exchange reserves in this context is helpful? Is it a fair point at all?
The government's done a better job than most people thought was possible in getting capital outflows under control. You know, they've really stabilised the yuan, and the sort of downward pressure on the yuan, which we saw 6 to 8 months ago, isn't really there today. But it's come at a fairly large cost. Not only have they run down their foreign exchange reserves, but they've also essentially given up on financial reform. And so 3 to 4 years ago, the whole sort of narrative around China was how quickly would China open up its financial markets. You know, we talked about the rise of the redback and China's yuan, and that China's bond market and equity markets would be globally sort of significant markets in years to come. Now, that narrative's really changed, and I think the cost of China's stabilisation of the currency has been financial reform, and that is a very big price that they've paid, and they've kicked the can down the road, if you like, and that is really going to set China up for some problems in the future. And, you know, that was some of the things that, you know, Moody's highlighted last week when they downgraded China's sovereign credit rating.
Given that everything is relative, there nevertheless does seem to be a slowing down of the economy. How concerned should we be about it? And is Beijing in a better position to control the slowdown now than it has been before? Isabel Hilton is CEO of China Dialogue.
It's a slowdown, certainly. It's a slowdown that was both predicted and desired. And the question that the Chinese policymakers were looking at a couple of years back was whether it would be a hard landing or a managed slowdown. It's a slowdown which is in accord with the point in the cycle of growth that China has experienced. It's gone through 20, 30 years of double-digit growth, and every other tiger, large and small, has leveled out at that point. You take a deep breath, and your concern is to avoid the middle-income trap. To do that, you have to move away from low added value bulk manufacture and move into higher technologies, which China is also doing. Whether China is going to make it through the middle-income trap really remains to be seen. It's pretty challenging.
Isabel Hilton. Still to come on The Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the latest measures to open up the Chinese bond market. Now, for global investors interested in gaining increased exposure to the world's second largest economy, what about new measures to open up the bond market, the world's third largest? There have been some recent announcements. Kiran Ganesh takes up the story.
China's a huge market for financial securities. We obviously all think about, whether it's the UK or Europe or the US. China is now, said the world's third largest bond market, the world's second largest equity market. Real major player in financial markets. And, they've recently announced this new scheme called the Bond Connect scheme, which will allow some foreign money to flow into that bond market. It follows up from a number of schemes to allow people to invest into equity markets, connecting the Hong Kong market, which is widely accessible, to some of the local markets. So they are really just trying a number of these different schemes and opening up different routes for foreign investors to move money into China. And it's really what they need to do at this stage. They're trying to become more of a consumer-driven economy. This basically means that they will import more goods and export less goods. And to offset that, they need to attract foreign money to make up the balance. So it's something that they need to do, and we'd expect to see a lot more of these avenues to investment in China opening in the coming years.
Next, we asked Angus Grigg in Shanghai whether, in his view, the Bond Connect scheme points people broadly in the right direction.
Nothing's linear in China, we like to say. And so while they've sort of clamped down on other financial reforms, this Bond Connect is a step forward, it is a step in the right direction. Whether or not that is going to entice global investors to get more involved in Chinese bonds, that's debatable. And I think also you've seen with the Hong Kong Shanghai Connect with the stock market, it really hasn't seen a flood of capital in the mainland China as the government would have hoped, or certainly hasn't been as high as the government would have hoped. And so, look, I guess the Bond Connect is definitely a step in the right direction, but will it have a material impact on the Chinese bond market? I don't really think so. Probably because people think that the direction of the yuan is probably, over the sort of medium, or certainly in the short term, is down, or is lower rather than higher. So I don't think people are rushing to get exposure to China like they might have been 4 or 5 years ago, where they just saw the currency going up and saw the currency as a one-way bet.
A final thought this week from Angus Grigg, who urges investors and observers alike not to discount that Moody's decision, which he mentioned earlier, from last week.
I think you can't discount how significant the Moody's decision was last week. I think that was a really a repudiation of the whole sort of China development strategy, really. What they are saying is that they need to get on and do some serious reforms. They can't keep sort of pumping the economy up with credit indefinitely. They can't keep building stuff to sort of fuel growth. And, the main criticism was that the ability of Chinese banks to allocate capital efficiency is bad and declining. And that is the real issue. And so while, they're not saying there's going to be a financial crisis or a banking crisis in China anytime soon, mainly because it's state banks lending to state-owned companies, the issue is around capital allocation and the ability of that capital to create growth gets or declines every year. And so they're essentially pumping more debt into the system and getting less growth out of it. And that is the big issue for China. And it's going to take some very hard decisions from Beijing to sort of wean itself off that cycle, which has really been going now for probably since the global financial crisis in 2008.
And we end by reflecting on the wider issue of attracting foreign investment. We asked Isabel Hilton to discuss how China is faring in this regard, and indeed to address some of the now rather familiar structural economic problems.
There's a set of reforms known as the third plenum reforms, which are not doing very well. And one of the problems there is tackling the inefficiencies that are built into the big state-owned enterprises. These are virtually states within states in China, and they have proved very hard to reform. So in the third plenum reforms, we had the promise of a much greater role for the market, for instance, in the whole Chinese economy. That hasn't really happened. It's hard to get efficiencies if you don't do that. As far as foreign investment goes, one of the difficulties is that so much of the Chinese economy remains closed to foreign investment, and the kind of things that people would like to be taking part in now, they tend to find that there are barriers both to investment and participation. So in much of the, you know, financial services market, for instance, or in telecoms, or in entire sectors, and it's one of the frustrations that all of China partners have. And we hear it from the European Union, we certainly hear it from the United States. And so unless China opens up a little bit, I think that foreign investment is not going to grow substantially.
And that's Isabel Hilton bringing us to the end of this 139th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.